أفديكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم
وأهديكم ضياء عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
وأهديكم ضياء عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
فمأساتي التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم
وأهديكم ضياء عيني ودفء القلب أعطيكم
فمأساتي التي أحيا نصيبي من مآسيكم
أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم
أنا ما هنت في وطني ولا صغرت أكتافي
أنا ما هنت في وطني ولا
وقفت بوجه ظلامي يتيما عاريا حافي
أنا ما كنت في وطني ولا صغرت أكتافي
وقفت بوجه ظلامي يتيما عاريا حافي
أناديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم أشد على أياديكم وأبوس الأرض تحت نعالكم وأقول أفديكم
حملت دمي على كفي وما نكست
Eduardo did on Little Sierra, and we have a full house this morning. What I want, I'm taking the place of temporarily for Barbara Bernstein. She's on vacation, and she'll be coming back next week. So I wanted to do something about the Israeli wall. I'll talk about the Israeli wall, and I also wanted to talk about the wall that. Here in the U.S., it's being called the Taco Wall and some other things. I also am going to be looking at the role of U.S. corporations in the construction of the wall here in the United States between the Mexico and the U.S., and also the role of U.S. corporations in the construction of the wall in Israel. So I'm going to have everybody introduce themselves. So Pedro, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Pedro Sosa. I'm working with American Friends Service Committee in Portland.
I am Wilbur Wood, retired Presbyterian minister and member of Vancouver for Peace.
I'm Rani Al-Hazar. I'm a Palestinian and with the Media Committee of the American United for Palestinian Human Rights here in Portland.
I'm Diane Adkin, and I am from, actually, Camas, Washington, and I am representing the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation.
Hi, I'm Doug Wilbanks, and I live in Beaverton. I belong to OFFER, Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, and I also belong to Sabeel, a Palestinian Christian organization. That's both organizations are trying to bring peace over there.
I'm also going to... start out early by anybody that wants to call in during the show and has questions or some commentary, please feel free to call in. I forgot that call-in number. I should know it. 503-231-8187. Listeners, cable people, call in anytime you want, but please keep the language down, because you know we have FCC looking over us. But you can call in. Let's start with and anybody wants to join in the discussion, go ahead. Casual discussion. So let's start with the wall in Israel. I want to give people a sense of how that got started. So let's start with.
Well, I would
you
say
you are.
Oh, I'm Doug Wilbanks. Yeah, and actually, I got started about 2 or 3 years ago. Israel just quietly, unilaterally started building it on their own. basically to protect Israelis against suicide bombers. But what has happened is they really ended up designing it as an additional land grab of Palestinian land and water, separating Palestinian villages, separating Palestinians from each other. So it's really had a very, instead of being built on the border where it would, you know, protect both people, it's really an aggressively placed wall. Interferes with the Palestinian human rights, it takes their land, and you have to get permits to go through these various gates to go take care of your farmland, you know, which makes it very uncomfortable and hurts the Palestinian economy very much.
Let's give people a sense of what the wall is, I mean, what it looks like, the dimension, the actual characteristics of it, because it's, for me, it's pretty, it's fascinating, this wall. So introduce yourself.
Diane Adkin. The wall is amazing because it can be seen from space. Apparently it's one of the two walls that can be seen from space. The other one is the Great Wall of China. I'm going to read a description by Andrew Rubin. The wall is three times as high and twice as wide as the Berlin Wall. It is surrounded at a distance by nests of barbed wires rolled up like stacks of hay piled around it. High-voltage circuits run through the so-called smart fences, 3 meters tall. That would be three times 12. 9 to 12 feet tall, that line the perimeter of the barrier. Between the fence and the wall is a trench, and over 2 meters high, studded with piercing metal spikes. Outside the smaller fence, the Israeli military has paved a path of finely ground sand that is groomed to make footprints visible. At certain intervals, there are 10-meter vertical steel poles housing highly powered stadium lights and surveillance cameras. Adjacent to the wall stand huge turrets and watchtowers where Israeli observers and snipers are stationed. The Israeli military has defined the area of the wall to be a military zone, and soldiers have orders to shoot to kill upon the discretion of the commanding officer. So this is what they call a security fence, but it really is an aggressive wall deep in Palestinian territory.
Again, I want to get a sense of, okay, how long is this wall again?
It is three times longer than the actual border between Israel and the West Bank. Much longer than the Berlin Wall that we heard so much all of our lives. And I have it in kilometers.
That's fine.
Kilometers. It's over 640 kilometers.
Okay. And it begins from let's give a sense of where it starts and where it ends.
What is interesting about the wall is when we hear about it in the U.S. media, we assume that it is a security fence on the Green Line between Israel proper and the occupied West Bank. But in actuality, it goes down the West Bank and separates the West Bank from the Jordan River and from Jordan and other states. So it is goes into Palestinian territory on both sides, and it leaves a little hourglass shape in the center where Palestinians can live.
This is Rani again. I guess we always have to be skeptical when we hear about Israel's excuses about this being a security fence. I was reading something about East Germany when they built the Berlin Wall. They were calling it the anti-terrorism barrier. So there's always this declared reason, and then the real reason we find out is so much more different. And to add to what Diane and Doug were just saying, the wall not only isolates Palestinian communities in the West Bank from Palestinian communities inside Israel, but also encircles Palestinian communities inside the West Bank. So if we look, for example, at the community of Qalqilya, which is a Palestinian town in the northern West Bank, the town is completely encircled by the wall. They have one or two entrances, which are controlled by Israel, and they regulate the economy, the movement, everything of the people living in these communities. So initially they started the wall by building it by saying, oh, this is going to be between the West Bank and Israel. But then in the end it ended up, the next step was, okay, let's isolate these communities even further. So this is a multi-step approach, not just one wall, but it continues to grow into new forms.
Wilbur Wood here. What he has just said applies very significantly with the city of Bethlehem. And at this Christmas season, as we think about Bethlehem, what has happened this year is that the wall has completed its encirclement of Bethlehem. That is, it not merely separates Palestinian Bethlehem from Israel, it separates Palestinian Bethlehem from the rest of Palestine. It leaves one, perhaps two, entrances into Bethlehem, and it is, and those are strictly controlled by the Israeli army, which means that people, tourists, have to go through the checkpoints to get into Bethlehem. It's very restrictive of all kinds of commerce, and it's very restrictive of the normal activities. The president of the Bethlehem University told us a while back that with the completion of the wall, which is essentially complete at Bethlehem now, they will lose 75% of their students because they cannot go from where they live into Bethlehem to go to school. This is one example. Bethlehem is not, strictly speaking, just one town. It is a center, the city of Bethlehem itself. It has, along with it, a number of small villages. And these villages are also cut off from Bethlehem. So the entire area is sliced into small pieces, preventing any kind of normal life for the people of the larger community of Bethlehem.
Later on, I want to take a look at the issues of how this has affected the olive farmers, especially. They've been really hard hit, but we'll talk about that later. I have with me, of course, Pedro Sosa, and we, the United States, we have a wall, too. And it's also a fence, and it also has technology on it. And it stretches from San Diego all the way through the Texas border. So I have with me Pedro Sosa, and he's going to talk to you about our wall. And Pedro, let's talk about how the characteristics of the wall and what's the purpose of this wall. I mean, I know, but I want you to explain it.
Thank you, Eduardo. Thank you for inviting me to be here today and with these wonderful people and sharing their experience or about the wall building looks like. We're going to have a fence around the world. In the United States, about a decade ago, started militarized the border with a gatekeeper program, Hold the Line, Safeguard in Rio Grande, where about more than 3,000 people already died in the desert. But after September 11, increased presence of the or militarized the border with the real ID passed on last May this year. Also, the government gonna send more resources or millions to build the third fence in San Diego. Not just one; it's gonna be three fences, and that's. That means more people gonna die. And this year already died 460 people in the desert because it's hard to it's lots of military in the border. Also include the presence of the Minutemen, the anti-immigrant people hunting the people in the border. But this issue, we raise this issue because this is the effect of the globalization, the free trades. That's where the people, they had to leave our country. We're not here just because we, as a tourist, or because we try to find a way how we can give our child a future. But this is our world.
Pedro, do you know the companies involved in the construction of this fence and wall?
No, I don't know the companies involved in this. Just I know the resources. And
you mentioned also the presence of the Minutemen. Could you give people tell a little bit about what the Minutemen are?
Basically, are anti-immigrant people, and they already forget we have the immigrant background, and now they call themselves the Minutemen, and hunting people in the border. It's a civil patrol in the border. Many of them, they are veterans, and
Ronnie, in Israel, I'm sure there's a similar organization of Minutemen, or am I wrong about that?
Well, you have the Israeli army, which is much more equipped, and of course you have armed settlers who are living in communities within Palestinian areas, who are armed to their teeth in weapons, mostly supplied by the United States and American companies like Caterpillar.
Well, that's the other thing. Later on, we'll take a look at Caterpillar. But we have a caller, Story. Welcome.
Hi.
Your question or comment.
Well, I just hope that this discussion can go forward without dwelling on just platitudes and address in both regions that are being discussed the fact that resources are not there to sustain the population that is being realized there, and that applies to the United States. I want the discussion to address such issues as how does a nation or a sovereignty of any kind budget for unrestricted population growth, and also the diminishing or the ratio of resources available to growing population. I mean, this is a significant issue for most Americans, is how do we continue a standard of living with regards to essential resources when those resources are finite, but the population is growing exponentially, and as it is in both areas have limited capacity. I mean, and certainly in the Palestine, Israel area, it's certainly been long exceeded, and they are only sustained by dependence upon outside resources brought in. And a lot of the dispute is, of course, is about the water. But in the United States, for one, how does a nation budget for unrestricted population growth? And that's a significant issue with regards to controlling our borders. Can Americans hope to live in any way similar to the way they've lived in the past with regards to water use, wood fires, all of that? So no platitudes, please, and let's talk really about population growth. Thank
you. Okay, Ronnie. Let's look at these platitudes.
So I think maybe we can engage in this discussion, but I think part of the wall that's going to be coming in the United States or is already being under construction is to create another mechanism for globalization. When we talk about these new program of temporary workers, what does that mean? You know, getting cheaper workers, institutionalized? Cheap labor, and that we see that with in Israel and Palestine when we have these maquiladora type communities which are establishing for the service of corporations.
You speak about resources, and in the case of Palestine, one of the functions of the wall that, or separation barrier that Israel is building, is not merely to capture land, but to capture resources. And almost without exception, where the wall makes great detours, as has been talked about in relation to Qaqidia, the wall separates Palestinian communities from their water sources and annexes those water sources to Israel. The Holy Land has a major water problem. The Sea of Galilee, fresh water, is almost entirely drained into the Israeli water system. The Yakon River, from coming out of Syria or Jordan, is almost entirely drained into the water systems of the Arab states. The result is that the Jordan River today is mainly a sewer, with only the sewage flowing down into the Dead Sea at a much lower rate than it ever has before, and the Dead Sea is dying, if that's possible.
Let me give listeners the phone number to call in. It's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And my name's Eduardo de Landeros Tierre, and we're talking about the Israeli wall, and also we're talking briefly about the wall between Mexico and the United States. And Pedro, I don't know if you got the sense of that call.
Not at all, but something I want to share with you. It's about the, I think he was talking about resources also. I think our resources or our tax, it's sending or spending in something. I think we need to fix the law. We need to fix the immigration law. Not we are saying to open the border. Just we need to fix the immigration law, to where the people can go and come in and safely. And the other thing I want to share, it's about the globalization. The globalization also, not only the economic should be globalized, also the human mobility, because the corporations, just they are thinking about economy, but not the workforce. And we need to globalize that, the human mobility.
We have two phone callers, but on some business. This is KBOO Portland. We have our first call. That's caller. Are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I guess I am. Your name? What's your first name?
I'm Lisa.
And where are you from?
Vancouver.
Okay. And your question or comment?
I just wanted to talk about the caller who came, who was just saying that there were platitudes being discussed, and he didn't like that. And I just wanted to mention that he seemed to be coming from a platitude himself, that immigrants take resources instead of give back. And immigrants have withholding from their pay. They pay taxes for services that they don't necessarily get.
I kind of like to switch that back to Israel a little bit, because they have a population that is growing, Israel, because they go around recruiting Jews to come to Israel to live. And I think their population is already in excess. Poverty is increasing in Israel itself, partly because they're taking the money and enlarging the settlements. And they're also building this wall, which is very costly. So if this guy is concerned about, you know, population and resources, Israel is misusing their resources, because the main problem that goes on over there is that Israel continues to take more Palestinian land. And that takes money. It takes money to support an army to back up their taking this land, because the Palestinians don't want their land to be taken. And this is the result of a lot of the violence. Is Palestinians cannot just sit by and allow their land to be taken day after day. And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay. We have another phone caller, another caller. Mike, are you there? And where are you from, Mike?
Syracuse.
Okay, and your comment or question?
Well, again, on this, you know, responding a bit to your first caller, and I'd just like to distinguish the situation that's going on in Palestine, Israel, from what's going on in the United States. I don't, his comment that it, the issue of population is the same in both sectors, it's just false. What's going on in the United States, if there's depletion of resources, it's happening because the corporations control huge resources in the United States. There's abundant resources in this country. They're being misused by corporations, and the function of callers, like people like the caller, is to divert that conversation onto a racist conversation about immigration. And there's just no two ways to put that. And I've heard this enough on KBOO, you know, a small cadre of people calling in. They need to confront where they're coming from. The people behind the, you know, there's a big anti-immigrant push right now in this country. It's organized by white supremacist-linked organizations. People who fall into that discussion need to really check themselves, because what they're advocating is militarization of the border, militarization of the society, and they're not talking about the issues they claim to be talking about, quality of life. The effect of Walmart on wages or resources is way huger, way out of scale to the effect of immigrants crossing the border to work at Domino's Pizza. I mean, it's just, there's just no comparison. But you can get on the phone and you can make a statement and pretend that you know what you're talking about.
Thank you. Now let's does anybody have a comment on that? Or if not, let's go on to Roger from Portland. You there, Roger?
Yeah, what responsibility does the Mexican government, what may or may not the Mexican government have responsibility in the conditions in Mexico that cause people to want to come up here? And another thing, about an issue is the methamphetamine, the very large methamphetamine labs in Mexico that the United States, the various agencies here have really, really curtailed U.S. Production of methamphetamines. It's still going on, but here in Oregon especially, there's been really quite a bit of control, you might say, prosecution and so forth.
Let's get Pedro to comment on that in terms of what's the responsibility of the Mexican government in the wall that's between the United States and Mexico. What's their viewpoint on that?
Your question was to what's the government?
What is it Vicente Fox saying about, you know, the ongoing construction, as you pointed out, in San Diego?
I think the government, they don't say anything about against to build this wall. Just they are looking about the economy, but not thinking about the people.
Pedro, you also had some legislation or some other information concerning the issue of the barrier between the United States and Mexico. Am I right? Or
and like what I said before, the Real ID, with the Real ID Act, the government can build these fences. Doesn't matter. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about the rights or the loss of the community in the border or the Native American people. That's the one thing. It's a violation of human rights. It's a violation of the rights of the people. And the resources, it's God over there. And with this, not only the resources, I think we need to think about our rights to live safe with a health environment. But not only the resources, it's our life.
I think we still have one more phone call. Gary from Portland. You there, Gary?
Yes, I am.
And your comment or question?
Well, it's just about the Minutemen.
The Minutemen, go ahead.
Yes. As soon as I heard that word a few days ago in Time magazine, it rang bells from my youth in Southern California with its association with, anyway. I went down to library and got myself out McGeer, Suburban Warriors, published by Princeton University, a professor from Harvard, who describes the Minutemen as a radical extremist group active in Southern California in the years between, especially in the years between, say, 55 and 64, associated with, say, with the same sorts of things that are going on now, but in a more extreme way, and also associated with the very early rise, sort of the pre-New Republican era, and it gets into, well, not directly, but by association with the rise of Ronald Reagan and Orange County, which actually is what the book is a case study of the rise of the New Republicanism in Orange County, which was a new frontier town, and which was one of the new suburban communities, middle-class communities, that rose after World War II. And that was the cradle. Those areas that...
Thank you very much, caller. We have... Ronnie has some music. Tell us about this music that you want to play for us.
Well, the next... I think the next track is from David Drovix, who is a folk musician who was just recently in Portland. We're going to hear a song that he made about the wall, about how it separates Semites from each other, Palestinians from Palestinians, and Israelis from Palestinians.
All right, so let's give a listen to this Palestinian song.
Building a wall. A wall between friends, a wall that justifies any means for their ends, a wall between Semites, rich and poor, brothers and sisters from not so long before. Many feet thick and 20 feet high, no one can look through it and into the eye of a person you might know, to whom you might confide. Now just a stranger on the other side. They're building a wall between water and land, so we can eat fruit and they can eat sand. A wall to make sure that our orchards will grow and our kids can get fed and not need to know of the cities in ruins and the children in fear that your fathers and brothers in tanks might be near. A wall to keep quiet that which you fear most, so you don't have to listen to your grandfather's ghost. They're building a wall between future and past, a wall to keep separate the chambers of gas from bulldozers, gunships, and the tears of a child. Dignity, love, and honor defiled, to remove reality from your facts on the ground. A wall to keep distant the terrible sound of the houses that crumble and the children that die. A wall to keep separate the truth from the lie. They're building a wall, and at such a cost, land, money, and safety, all the lives lost. A wall made of brick, but bricks can be broken, when the people of Zion have finally awoken and said no more walls, no more refugees, no more keeping people upon their knees. And in the history books we'll someday recall, before apartheid was ended, they were building a wall.
Yeah, my name is Doug Wilbanks. I just want to make a couple points here. We're reminded from time to time that we are a nation of laws. Well, there are international laws, too. And the wall that Israel is building has gone before the international court, and they have ruled that it is illegal as is being built right now, partly because it's mostly being built on Palestinian land. But you know, people need to know that this whole occupation that Israel has over the Palestinian people is illegal, too, according to Resolution 242 passed in 1967, which told Israel to get out of the occupied territories. And we have never enforced that. But, you know, so the wall is illegal. The occupation is illegal. The settlements that this wall is going around to include into Israel, these settlements are also illegal. So you got an illegal wall encompassing illegal settlements, all to gain more land for Israel and to make the settlements part of Israel, and all done at the expense of human rights of Palestinians. These are some things that I think need to be mentioned.
Of course, that's I'll try to give the other side to that. Israel is saying that this barrier is necessary to defend itself against bombers and terrorists, and it's necessary for their survivability for Israeli citizens, and therefore that wall needs to be there.
That I'm Wilbur. That may be their reason or stated reason for the wall, but the very fact that they are not separating Israel from the occupied territories by the wall, but rather are cutting out large pieces of the occupied territories for their own use, belies that assertion. I found it interesting listening to the talk about the American wall on our border, and it strikes me that there are a couple of contrasts here. The American wall is to keep people from getting into the United States. The Israeli wall is to keep people from traveling around in their own homeland. The American wall is built on American property. The Israeli wall, most of it, is built outside the proper territory of Israel. So there's some real contrasts here that give us a little different picture. Actually, Israel built a wall around the Gaza Strip, to which nobody objected because it was built on the boundary line. The objection to the wall that is being built is not that it's protecting Israel, which may be a good reason for it, but that it is adding land to Israel. And actually, in the Supreme Court of Israel in the past month, a cabinet member has admitted that there are reasons for the wall having to do with annexing territory. And currently, the discussion in Israel is, shall we say that the future border of Israel is the wall?
Ronnie.
Yeah, I want to disagree a little bit with my fellow panelists. I believe that you can't just simply build a wall and throw salt in the eyes of hundreds of years of history. So, like, we have demographic facts that we have 1.4 million Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip, right? And then we have 2.4 million Palestinians living in the West Bank. They're not contiguous territory. So first, we're separating these two Palestinian communities from each other by these kinds of structures. The next part is that you have, within the state of Israel, you have about 1.3 million Palestinians who have Israeli citizenships. So how can we justify separating those Israeli citizens who are Palestinian from their other Palestinians who are not privileged to have Israeli citizenship. And again, the similarities here between the United States can be seen, where you have American citizens of Mexican descent, and you have long historical ties to Mexico. And I don't think we can separate those. I think it is immoral to do that.
Yeah, I the idea of building a having a wall between human beings to me strikes me as is very prehistoric or very Edgar Allan Poe-ish, you know, trying to keep out of, you know, as if a human beings were a disease or something. The wall that's between that we have here, it's been called the taco wall, I guess, and it also is keeping it for me. You know, I as a Latino, and seeing that wall in San Diego, and it's and for other people that have seen that wall and grew up near that wall, I've had certain I've had a relationship with this wall, and that's also, you know, seeing people go through it and be killed, you know, die as they're crossing, trying to get across this wall. Also seeing the Border Patrol and how they treat people. So I see a similarity between, you know, what we have here and what you what's happening with the Palestinians too, Ronnie. You know, but let's take a phone call before I jump into my diatribe here. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, I'm calling because a caller earlier said that the people that call KBOO are the ones that call KBOO about immigration and complain about it are connected to racist groups and things like that. I call up and I discuss immigration. I discuss it from the viewpoint. I'm just an individual. I don't belong to any group. You know, what I've seen in this country in the last 20 years is that the U.S. non-college kids are having to compete too hard against all kinds of immigration, legal, illegal, from, you know, all parts of the world, and that the people that don't have a skill when they come out of high school are really in a tough spot, and I think that this is fueling crime. It's causing the social service dollars to be thinned out. We used to have more training programs and things like that in this country, and to me, it's not acceptable to kind of turn this class of people in this country into sort of Palestinians. And I want to say this. Most of my views on the world and economics and immigration come from the fact that demographic pressure, a population explosion, is a threat to everything. And everybody is responsible for this. The people of Mexico or their government are responsible for the fact that they have a lot of people with nothing to do, and that those people are coming here and being exploited by right-wing labor exploiters. And a lot of these contractors that exploit these workers are not required to pay taxes on these workers. So these workers come here, they force our communities to take Spanish language and things like this.
Okay. Diane, did you have anything to say about this? This is an argument. I spent many years in California, and this line of thinking is especially strong in Southern California. Diane, did you have any?
I wanted to talk about the economic costs that the caller brought
up,
and why is our country funding a wall instead of spending that money educating our students and getting universal health care, things like that that we need? Why is our government funding the State of Israel to the tune of $15 million a week? $3 billion a year. Why is Israel putting up a wall at our taxpayer expense when the state of Louisiana can't get a wall around New Orleans to hold back the floodwaters? We're fighting the wrong wars.
Let's take another. We have Eduardo from Portland. You there, Eduardo?
Yes, I'm here. This is Eduardo.
Whoa. It looks like we...
The wall is to keep the illegals out. Okay? You stuck it up.
Okay. We can, Diane, I wanted to take a look at the role of there's American companies involved in the construction of this the Israeli wall, such as Caterpillar. Caterpillar is a international construction, makes heavy equipment, and they do their equipment involved in Iraq right now. The U.S. Army, for example, uses their equipment. So, Diane, what is Caterpillar and what its role in this wall, in the construction of the wall?
Caterpillar's got a great name in the U.S., a real family name. You can just picture old Henry on the back 40 plowing the field with his Caterpillar tractor. In the rest of the world, Caterpillar is not seen that way. Caterpillar is a destructive American institution. The Caterpillar tractors are specially armored for use in Israel, and they're used against the people. They are demolishing homes. 10,000 homes have been demolished in the occupied territories since 1967, which means hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are refugees or re-refugees. They're refugees a second time. Caterpillar is vulnerable for this. It is against international law for a company to make a product and allow it to be used against human rights. And that's what's happening. Instead of Caterpillar's slogan that they have now, how about Caterpillar kills? Caterpillar bulldozers have run down people, including an American activist, Rachel Corey, who was 23 years old when she was killed trying to defend a Palestinian home from being demolished. So Caterpillar is doing the worst possible thing it can for America abroad, and it should be stopped. And I want the listeners to know that this is something that they can get involved in. Caterpillar is vulnerable on this. They really don't do that much business with Israel. It's huge for the Palestinians and for Israel, but in terms of their overall global business, it's not that much. Pressure from us can turn this around. If we write the president of Caterpillar and we write our newspapers and we tell our congressmen that Caterpillar is killing people and destroying homes and that is against human rights and against our own laws, then we can actually make a difference here.
Well, I was just going to add to that, too, that there is a lawsuit against Caterpillar. There's also a lawsuit against our government because our government and Caterpillar are basically under the same rules as far as selling equipment to another country to use for human rights violations. This equipment is sold, you know, that we sell to Israel. Both Caterpillar and the United States in their military equipment is to be used for defensive purposes only. But really, it's not used for defensive purposes. It's used for aggression. The Palestinians have no defense against this aggression. The Palestinians have no tanks. The Palestinians have no jets. The Palestinians have no navy. So they're very pretty much defenseless other than these militants that you see with guns. And I'm afraid they show them much too much instead of showing the nonviolent demonstrations that go on day after day that are never covered by our press. Our press has not done a very fair job. And we've looked into that, too, from the standpoint of our organization. But there's a lot of stories that you don't hear. And I was emailing the press stories about the wall for over a year before they finally came out with something about the wall.
Let's take another a call. George, are you there?
Oh, yes. See, a couple of points. That there's no wall between the United States and Canada.
Yes, I was going to...
In comparison with the United States and Mexico, because I think I've read someplace that there is no border in the world where the standard of living is so different than between the United States and Mexico. And the other was, suppose Haiti was right next door to us. We'd have probably hundreds of thousands of Haitians come in here. Now, nobody is extending them the welcome mat, you know, say, come over the ocean and we'll let you in. And the other one is, what do your people from Mexico think about the improvement of conditions in Mexico? There's going to be a big presidential election next June or July. And I'm reading here that the longer one stays in Mexico, the more one word, impunity is heard. That the wealthy, drug gangs, and interest groups are accustomed to behaving as though they're above the law. Neither the justice system nor democracy have traditionally checked them. So what do your people from Mexico think about, you know, are things going to get better down there so that they want to live there?
Thank you, caller. Well, Vicente Fox has voiced his objections to President Bush about the construction of the wall. However, I consider that his objections problematic, given the fact that he's getting, on the other hand, getting strong support from President Bush in terms of funding for his anti-drug programs. Also, it's problematic since the federal government, the Mexican federal government, is mistreating its own people. So anything that that Vicente Fox is saying, I think is like this double thing going on. You know, on one hand, he's saying you know that it's this wall is offensive to the Mexicans, and then on the other hand, he's mistreating his own people, i.e., the indigenous people in Chiapas. So that's my answer to that. Anybody else have a comment about the last phone call?
I'd go, this is Wilbur, going back to Roger's call about which included methamphetamines in along with immigration. In a sense, they're both the same problem. That it's not that Mexico is pushing them here. It's that we're attracting them. And if Mexico were producing Brussels sprouts, I don't think they'd come into the country the same way that methamphetamines come in. And Mexicans come to our country because we have jobs for them. The drugs come because we buy them.
That's right. And in fact, this economy depends on them, on their work, as a matter of fact, especially in California. So we have another caller, Joe from the Woods. Are you there, Joe?
Hello. Yeah, I'm here. Part of the problem with Mexican immigration that we keep leaving out is the effect that the United States government is having on and economic institutions in the U.S. are dismantling the subsistence autonomy of the people in Mexico to where there is no way they can make a living in their own country. And that is the result of what our government is doing to their economy.
Thank you. Anybody have a comment on that?
Well, I didn't understand it totally, but, you know, oh, go ahead. Do you have something to say, Diane?
Okay, and then we'll go on to Mike from Portland. You there, Mike?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Your question or your comment?
Well, actually, it's this. Israelis, despite and analyze these people, they have tremendous emotional problems because of what happened with Hitler. And so, which is hard for me to understand how people that suffered the type of oppression they suffered could turn around and do it to other people. And so one would have to psychoanalyze that group of people to understand that Israel as a whole have tremendous emotional, mental, and psychological problems because of what happened under Hitler. Could you respond to that?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wilbur here. Israel does have that kind of problems. One of our problems is that we look at Israel as a monolithic society, and the nation of Israel is much more, as much divided up as the United States is in opinions and power struggles and all of that kind of thing. One of the things that Israel perhaps has that we have in a much lesser degree is a very strong, highly conservative groups of Jewish rabbis that whose influence far outweighs their numbers. They also have Zionist groups who, in league with American Zionist groups, have influence that far outweighs their numbers. But in Israel, you'll find people of all stripes, and many of them are truly working for peace and being very supportive of the Palestinian causes. They believe that should Israel get out of the West Bank, get out of funding settlements, get out of paying for walls, Israel itself will be a better nation. And many people in Israel are saying that the effects are financial and social, and one of the major and terrible effects of the occupation is that they are bringing up their young people, as the young people are the ones doing the actual military occupying. They're bringing up their young people to be militant, hateful, and as one woman put it to us, they are killing the souls of our young people.
We have a long-distance call. Esteban, are you there?
Hey, thank you, folks. Thank you very much for having the program.
Well, and where are you from, Esteban?
Up in Skamania, Washington.
Great. Your question or your comment?
Well, I'm not sure on some of the facts. That's why I'm calling to ask. A friend of mine who's involved in labor and other issues pointed out that at the end of the Spanish-American War, I believe, there's a treaty signed by the American government with Mexico that said that no matter what happened, we would never put a military presence along our U.S.-Mexican border. And so I was wondering if anybody would have the time to research that, and that is the reason why we're having the Patriot nuts running around with their guns down on the border on American side. So I just thought I'd put that out there because that's something that legally we're bound to because it was signed into law. So I decided to pass it on and wondered if anybody knew of that.
I'm vaguely aware of it. I know that treaty is there, and of course it's been ignored, and it's being ignored by every administration. That's all I know about that one.
Okay, very good. Well, I hope that helps. Just something to be brought out. You know, if we're going to put the truth in people's face, then that should be put in the face that they don't have the right to put the military down there. Nor do I think that they have right to have, you know, illegal guns running around like loose cannons. So that's just my comments and thoughts, and thank you for keeping up the good work. And, you know, walls are put up by fearful, weak people. You know, if you're strong and you're loving, you can have your arms open, and you can also fend off those who mean you harm, because they expose themselves, you know. But I think someone wanting to get a job and better their life isn't a threat to anyone. It should help the whole world. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't want to get too dark, because there's a lot of hope in this. And so on that note, what can people do? I mean, we do, the wall is a reality, but it can be fought. How can people get involved? Is there a phone number people can call, a website, as we scramble around?
Yeah. My name's, I'm Doug, and we have an organization here in town called Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, and I was just looking for our phone number, but one thing I know, if you have a computer, just go on www.auphr.org, and you'll examine our website and see that we are an organization made up of Jews, Muslims, Christians, and secular people. And we really do want peace over there. There are some people who do not want peace over there. I'm very surprised to have learned and to pass on to you. But yeah, we join our organization, and if nothing else, at least look our website over and start to acquaint yourself with the truth. There's still a lot of myths that are believed here, and I fax our government quite a bit. I write letters. There are things that you can do, and the politicians are very reluctant to do much against Israel because there's a lot of pro-Israeli support in this country, and so we've had politicians tell us that they would do more, but that they don't feel the public is behind us, and to do anything even balancing supporting Palestine and Israel is political suicide. So we need more people to join with us and let their government know that that there are people who believe that the Palestinians need a freedom and a government too.
Let's take this phone call. Patty from Sherwood. Are you there, Patty?
I'm fine. I'm calling to join the conversation about action that can be taken. On November 23rd, Human Rights Watch wrote an open letter to Senator Clinton in response to comments that she made while in Israel. In particular, she said that the wall is against terrorists and it's not against the Palestinian people. You can access this letter on www.hrw.org. There's also contact information to Senator Clinton, and it behooves listeners to read this letter and to educate yourself and to contact people such as Senator Clinton, who has publicly endorsed the wall, even though she's a lawyer, and as it's mentioned, the wall has been found illegal by the International Court.
Thank you very much, Patty. Diane, did you have anything?
Obviously, we have a well-educated listener, and listeners that do want to educate themselves, there are a few other websites that I'd like to share with them. The Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, www.icahd.org, has got statistics under their frequently asked questions. A lot of our information comes from there. There is also the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, and that is www.btselem.org. And they have statistics on the colonization of Palestine, on the deaths, the detainees, the home demolitions, the wall, settlements, checkpoints, all of the daily life of the Palestinians and the human rights violations. So listeners need to take their activism one step further, educate themselves, and do like Doug does, and write those letters and make those phone calls.
Thanks, Diane. First of all, we have our morning zine continues. For example, coming up this on cable at 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Don. And then at 9:30, it's Per Fegerang. He's going to be speaking with former KBOO host and reporter Paul Roland, and he's now in Italy. He's going to be talking about a popular revolt near his home in northern Italy over a massive high-speed train construction project. And then at 10, it's People Rise Up with, of course, Andrew Geller examining the active proposals to site liquefied natural gas facilities along the Oregon coast. And then at 11, it's Democracy Now! Journalist Robert Fisk. He's going to be talking on the recent killings in Lebanon and here protest against the WTO in Hong Kong and a look at the death toll for Iraqis in the war.
Oh, to continue the conversation about what can you do, I'm Wilbur, and one of my suggestions is go see the problem. Last spring, my wife and I went to Palestine. We traveled with a group called Sabil, which is a Palestinian Christian organization. There are other people who do tours in Palestine, including the Fellowship of Reconciliation. A lot of people go to the Holy Land, as I did in 1958, to take a tour of Christian sites. And that kind of tour is a tour of Israel. It's a tour that doesn't put you in contact with most of the population of the area. Find a way to go, that will put you in contact with Israelis, yes, and also with Palestinians in their homes in the West Bank. And you will get a balanced picture of what is happening and why some of these people are so adamant against Caterpillar or against the wall or against many other of the happenings. Go see it yourself. It costs money, yes, but then who doesn't take a vacation that does cost money?
Ronnie.
Yeah, I think you all are doing the right thing by listening to KABU this morning and educating yourself. One thing we found out from analyzing the mainstream media our organization offer has did a study last year.
Your organization being?
Offer, the American United for Palestinian Human Rights. And we studied the coverage of the Oregonian as far as reporting of Israeli and Palestinian deaths, and we found out that 9 times out of 1, Palestinian deaths are not mentioned and not reported on. We're currently working on a study about the editorial pages, and this will be coming in the beginning of the year. So far, just a sneak peek into that report, we found out that the International Court ruling on the wall was not covered by the Oregonian in their editorial and opinion pieces. So we see here such a major international event was censored by the editorial board of a major newspaper. And why I say this, because it's important for you to do extra hard work to get the facts, either by visiting Israel-Palestine or visiting the border in Mexico and talking to people and learning more about it.
Ronnie, I wanted to ask you this too. From your own personal experiences in Palestine and this wall, I really wanted to get your feelings on that personally.
Well, one of the ironies of this conflict that I'm a Palestinian refugee, so I do not have the ability to return at this moment. Although every Israeli or every person of Jewish descent can claim the right to return to Israel, Palestinians, 9 million Palestinian refugees are outside Palestine. So I have not been able to visit. I was born outside of Palestine.
Also, I wanted to take get some comments. It's not all not all Israelis are in favor of this wall. And that's not, main U.S. press hasn't been making that known too much either. In fact, there's been Palestinians and Jews working together in Israel, and there's this wonderful this coming together of Palestinian and Jew. And they're doing some really wonderful work working together, trying to can I get some comments on this, Wilbur?
Oh, yeah. For instance, just about every day, Palestinians go out and demonstrate against the wall, and there are internationals that go along with them, and there are Israelis that go along with them. Because a lot of Israelis do not like these injustices, and they realize what's being done to the Palestinian people. So there are many in Israel who care and do something about it. Unfortunately, like a lot of Americans, a lot of them don't care or are in denial about what's going on over there. I was emailing an Israeli for a year and a half, and I kept telling him, go over there and see what's going on, but he never did. There are many groups of Palestinians and Israelis working together. Bet Shalom is one of them.
Say that again for everybody.
Bet Shalom, yeah. They're an Israeli-Palestinian group that works together. There's so many groups over there, but our press does not educate Americans about that. They make it sound like all Palestinians want to kill all Jews, and that's the way it is. But if you look at maps, you'll see that there's more to it. If you look at maps, you'll see that in 1947, Palestine was pretty much mostly Palestinians. But you look at a map of what used to be Palestine today, and you'll find that Palestinians make up a few little islands in the West Bank and Gaza. So Palestinian land has shrunk so much, and that's what this is all about. When I went over there, I saw much construction going on by the Israelis. Every time you turned around, there was construction going on. But Israel prohibits the Palestinians from improving their own roads in their own lands, from building homes in their own lands as well as in Israel. So the Palestinians are just being kept in tighter and tighter areas, and more restrictions are put on their buildings. And, you know, it's a downhill side for the Palestinians where Israel is constantly building and improving.
I think what we have here is an apartheid situation like in South Africa. If we look at the total populations that are under Israeli military control or Israeli authority, we have more Palestinian Arabs living than actually Israeli Jews. And to this fact, this is what apartheid is all about, when you have laws and institutions that rule for one ethnic group in one way and for the other more privileges and benefits. So it's very important to know that we have 5 million Palestinians and close to 5 million Israeli Jews as well under Israeli control, and Palestinians are second-class citizens in most regards.
Rania, I want to get your take to get your comments on what I just said in terms of there's Jews and Palestinians working together to try to bring some sort of sense to the insanity there. What's your take on that? Is this just pure idealism or just what?
Well, you find a lot of frustrations among Palestinians sometimes when Israeli activists come in. They are more privileged. They are wealthier. At the end of the day, they can go to their homes and, you know, watch TV and go to school normally. There was a really good film produced by an American Jewish producer called Promises. And it followed the lives of children, Palestinians and Israelis, as they're trying to meet each other and learn about each other. And to me, that sums the conflict where we learn after these kids grow up, Palestinians are still living in refugee camps. They don't have jobs. They don't have freedom of movement. Whereas the Israeli kids have grown up and gone to the military and went to universities and get a better way of life. So I sense in many of the Palestinians a frustration that this does not materialize. But again, I don't want to be pessimistic about it. There are many Israelis right now who are pushing for an end to Zionism or an end to the exclusive nature for Israel, and they're looking forward to a post-Zionist experience where they can realize a Palestinian and Israelis living together under one state with no borders, just living equal, one man, one vote. And there are many Israelis who are subscribing to that right now. It's still a minority, but hopefully I believe that that presents the most promising solution to this conflict rather than implementing walls and apartheid ways of life.
Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. The demographics of Israel-Palestine are quite interesting. And one of the reasons that there is a lot of objection to this one-state solution, as it's called, of making the whole territory one country and human rights for everyone, is that it's very apparent that it would not be a Jewish state, because they're fairly evenly balanced now, but Palestinian population is growing more rapidly. Immigration into Israel has declined drastically, and so they're not growing at the same rates they have, but a one-state solution is horrifying to many of the Jewish Israelis.
I don't understand why it should be. I mean, if they get a guarantee of equal rights and they would be represented in parliament, just like we see in South Africa, where we have, after the dismantlement of apartheid, the whites were not kicked out or treated badly. I think it does present a lot of hope in integrating Israel actually within the Middle East. And there would be no problems because you have the same Palestinians and Israelis living together. I think you know, theoretically, I agree now it's more of a minority that advocates that. But what about the Palestinian, you know, threat, you know, the having a Palestinian way of life? That's not existing right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, earlier you talked about the, we talked about the Jewish psychology of being vulnerable to, and that plays a factor in all of this politics also.
Sure. I think what part of the if we get to hear this new music clip, and we see a collaboration between an Israeli Jewish musician and a Palestinian woman musician, and we see the musician, he actually talks about how can Zionism, who is so in love with return and the love of the land, be exclusive and not allow Palestinians that same right? And I think once that exists among Israelis and Palestinians, we will have a genuine chance of peace.
Well, I was just going to mention a couple of things. Israel isn't what it was intended to be. It was supposed to be a place where Jewish people could go and live their own lifestyle and have their own freedom and live in a secure place, especially, you know, in view of Nazism. But it hasn't turned out to be that way. Right now, they are very insecure, and because we support them, we have become insecure in the world, too, because the Muslims don't like what's going on with the oppression of their fellow Muslims and the taking over more and more of their land. So it hasn't worked out. The other thing that I was going to mention is that the only way Israel can exist is to continue to ignore the laws. You know, if they even, as a state, they were supposed to exercise the right of return, which is international law, that after the 48 war was over, like any other country does, you allow the citizens to go back to their property. Israel has never done that. There's 780,000 Palestinians that were really driven, not... They didn't go in response to their Arab leaders. They were driven from their homes. This is really proven. Benny Morris wrote a book that talks about this. So Israel cannot exist without ignoring the law.
We are coming to an end of this mini discussion. And so I want to get everybody to introduce themselves, reintroduce themselves, and if you have any phone numbers, to go ahead and do it. So let's start with you, Wilbur.
I'm Wilbur Wood, and I'm from Vancouver. I'm a retired Presbyterian minister, and I work with Vancouver for Peace, which deals with this issue, among many others.
I'm Rani Al-Hazar, and I'm with Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights. As with the other groups, we don't have our phone number, I think, but we have our website, which was www.offeraupr.org.
Diane?
And I'm Diane Adkin, and I'm a member of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. The website is www.endtheoccupation.org.
Okay, Ronnie, you had a... wait a minute. it's just my coffee is getting to me, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Doug Wilbanks, and I just wanted to mention that we have several... videotapes. I've got over 50, 60 videotapes of various presentations from Israeli soldiers to Palestinians to church people and videotapes and audio tapes, books, all kinds of literature that's available to people because we just want people to find out the truth. Once they realize the injustices, this is what propelled me on, finding out all the injustices that are being done over there. It's just overwhelming and very saddening to me.
Okay, Ronnie, go ahead and introduce this song.
Okay,
and
so
then we'll finish on that.
This is what we're wrapping up with. Great show, Eduardo. Thank you for having us here. We're going to hear a clip from Gilad Atzmon, CD called Exile. He's an Israeli musician. We're going to hear the tunes that you're going to hear are Jewish and Israeli tunes that are very rich in... saying the story of persecution, agony, and anguish. And onto that, you're going to hear the Palestinian...
We're just going to hear the one. the one, so.
Yeah, this is it.
Okay.
It's one CD, but you have, it's the hope that we're talking about, of Israelis and Palestinians getting together and singing this song of peace.
Okay. My name is Eduardo de Landeros Tierre, and thank you, everybody. I learned a lot, and and it gave me a lot of hope. Let's give a listen in Paz, Amor y Arte.
وعلى دلعه